Hello and welcome to the EMS Improv Podcast, where we engage, where we are mindful, and we share or tell our stories. I'm Eric Chase. We are powered by GEMS. This is the first EMS Improv Podcast of 2024, and I am delighted beyond measure to have this guest with me today. I've taken a few months off as I've been in school and working diligently to matriculate through this semester, to live life, to go up those hurdles and down the other side, to walk through walls and valleys, and to continue to live life to the best that I can be. When I met my guest approximately 9 or 10 months ago, it seems like yesterday, and it seems like 10 years ago, all wrapped together. He is a man of integrity and a man of spirit, a man that's lived life, and a man that has probably lived in the past regrets, and today is honoring his life and the gifts of the failures even that we may or may not have, and using them as perspective moving forward, shining a light for people, for himself. We're going to talk about some strategies. This is going to be for leaders. This is going to be for a human being. This is going to be for an employee. This is going to be for a husband or a wife, a girlfriend or a boyfriend, a grandchild, a granddaughter. Anyone that has been impacted by this world, by the effects of this world in your life, both positively, negatively, and how you may feel neutral at times and want to pull away, this man is the co-founder of That One Company. He's a friend. I one day want to meet him in person. Reggie Brock, welcome to the EMS Improv Podcast. And I can't thank you enough for being my first guest for 2024 for the EMS Improv Podcast.
Eric, it's great to be here. What an honor it is. I have, to be honest with you, I've done hundreds of podcasts over the years, and I have just shut them down for the last 6 months and hadn't had any interest, to be honest with you. And I've just kind of been recalibrating. And so when we met, again, I appreciate you saying this has moved past guest to friendship. And to me, that's one of the higher callings of life, is to be able to have friends and to contribute to them, and them you receive from them. So it's my great honor and privilege to be on here. And I've been looking for this for several months, for us being able to talk. So thanks for having me.
You are more than welcome. As we have spent time meeting and going to a much deeper level, you like to use the term deep water. But living life in the superficial, people think that they're not going to be hurt. They can't be hurt. They won't be hurt because they're not engaging, interacting with a lot of people. They're just kind of sliding through, getting by. Maybe they're doggy paddling, but they're not going to the deep water. They're not going to the place where they can see so much more beauty that can give to them. So with what you really want to talk about today, the collective force in humanity coming together, I'd like for you to kind of give an overview of what that means to you, and then we'll go deeper.
Okay. So this is not just a motto of our company, That One Company. It's truly what I believe. People ask me all the time, what do you do and how do you do it? And the fact of the matter is, everything I do is based upon what I believe. And what I believe is in the power of this collective force, where succeeding together as one is the most important ingredient. Eric, listen, man, people are running from each other. Like, we're going in such diverse directions. And some of it is because we just don't trust one another. We're unwilling to be vulnerable. We're unwilling to have these conversations that you and I used to have in our families growing up around kitchen tables, where we sorted through the issues of life together, not as individuals. And so, listen, I'm grateful for the strengths I have and the talents you have and the gifts you have. But guess what? We rise together. Like, we are better together. And so the ambition out of our life for our business, as well as my just personal endeavors, is that. How do I create connective tissue with somebody else that creates a bond that's hard to break? And so I don't want to live this life journey by myself. I've tried it. And it's not, it's been fun at some times, but it's been discouraging and disappointing at others. So it's just about how do we bring people together for a common purpose and mission and goal so that we together can succeed. And, you know, the day of teams and the day of community is not something old news. I think it's current. And so that's our heart. It's like, how do we bring people collectively together? Because it becomes a very noticeable force that when we unite as one, there are mountains that can be moved that we can't move ourselves. You with me? There are, we can make the impossible possible, which we couldn't do by ourselves, together, united in same spirit, goal, and direction, and just loving being with one another. And if I can pull that piece off with the last few breaths I have on earth, I'm going to feel like my well done is coming.
Yes. Wow. One of the things I heard there through that, and I was trying to be a listener and not just a participant. And I heard the impact of belonging. There's such a powerful impact of belonging that for the people that are listening to this, that work for a corporation, that own a company, that are an employee, that are punching that time clock, so many of them, so many of us over time have not felt that power, that good power of belonging, that we have been isolated in the group of people, surrounded by people, positive and negative. The impact of belonging brings to them a sense of guilt, shame, or pain, or struggle.
Yep.
How can we speak to that person that this resonated with, Reggie, to say, I see you, and I understand your anxiety just went up when you heard that, when I looked you face to face, and I also want to let you know that you're loved, and we can do this together, but they don't trust right now because they've been hurt.
So I don't just see them, I feel them. Yeah. I mean, I've been there. I've been the guy who seemed like being on the outside, but being on the inside of an organization, even a family, any type of community, it doesn't matter. I have physically been inside, but every other way of my life being outside, just didn't feel like I belong. And there are really two factors that I think play into a sense of belonging. And that is, number one, that we are seen, really three things. We're seen, we're heard, and we're felt. And so if you just look at an organization's issues with retention, I deal with corporations. That's who we deal with primarily, just businesses. And so one of the challenges that we hear from companies all the time is we can't keep people. Like we just, you know, there is such a swiveling effect in terms of people coming in and leaving quickly. And we just don't understand why. Reggie, we give them good compensation. Reggie, we give them good benefits. Reggie, we give them great training. We gave them, you know, all of these ancillary benefits. But when I talk to their people, the biggest overriding issue is missing is I am a fixture here, you know, in terms of a role that I play, but nobody listens to me. Nobody. You know, nobody gives me the opportunity to really add to this company. I just check boxes and do the things that my role requires. And so here's what's interesting. Forbes magazine just did a report not long ago and said that 40% of employed Americans right here today, employed Americans are looking for another job currently. They're already employed, but they're looking. And the reason they said it's not because of money, it's because of a sense that they lack the feeling of belonging. And so what I would say to people is you need to find a place where you sense belonging is real and you feel like who you are is accepted. And it's, you know, you're approved and you're a part of something bigger than yourself. Now, here's the last thing I'm going to say about that, because those who belong, Eric, are the highest levels of contributors that an organization could ever want. If I feel like I belong, I'm going to get up every day and hustle like nobody has to try to manipulate me to get to do, because I'm a part of something bigger than me. And I don't want to let those I belong to down. It's just that it's a powerful dynamic that if you can just create, give me a safe place to where I feel like this is where I belong. I can't be chased. I can't be drawn away by lust of my eyes or heart because you're giving me more money or you're giving me more benefits. Nothing wrong with that. But it's just harder to lodge somebody out of a belonging environment to get them to do something else when they feel like their contribution matters. And so I totally get it, and I believe it. And I've been that guy, too, who's had a lot of talent in the past, but I just never felt like I belonged. And as a result, I was constantly looking for what was next.
So that brings up a fantastic point, and where contribution matters. We know that. We know that spiritually. Yeah. We know that scientifically. We know that psychologically. Mm-hmm. We can show people data all day long that that not only contribution matters, but that feeling, they've been heard, they've been seen, they have been felt. Those three things. If they're not, if any one of them isn't there, the person is halfway out the door in their mind, even if they're a good employee. So with that being said, we don't want to let people down. Most people, there's that one half of 1% of people across the world that are incapable of caring, sociopathy, psychopathy.
You know,
so that's a very minute group. And for the people that don't want to let people down yet are afraid of vulnerability, are afraid of engaging. And you talked about team before, and there's a personal story, Reggie.
Yeah.
Would you be okay sharing that
sure.
kind of now? Because I think that hits all of these things that we just went over and that you just kind of articulated.
Yeah. So the first thing that I would say is this before I get into my story. We are going to fail people. You have got to realize as a human being, whether it's intentional or not, there's going to be things that happen that you disappoint people. Here's the problem, Eric. For me personally, I took those disappointments and drove to secret places. Rather than be vulnerable and talk about it, because I didn't trust the world that I was living in at that time. So I just go deep into secrecy. And it just creates this cancer inside of me that was never removed. And when it's not removed, it grows. And so then, because I just kept things in secret, there were things that would come out of me that people didn't understand. I didn't understand myself, but they carried crazy amount of impact on their lives and mine. And so one of the things that I would tell people before I really talk about my story is this. You have to find safe place to where those things that are challenging you, the disappointments you're afraid of, you have to find a place where those can be extracted out of you in you talking and being vulnerable and giving trust another chance. Because many of us don't trust because it's been violated by people that are significant to us. I'm not talking about some crazy lunatic on the corner, you know, holding up a sign, disagreeing with our views. I'm talking about people that are entwined in us, that are deep within us, that have hurt us. And guess what? I've done the same to people I love. And so the fact of the matter is you can't allow it to drive you to the secret place, because when it drives you to the secret place, there's going to be a manifestation that occurs out of that cancerous, unresolved issue that's going to blossom into things that become, if you're not careful, out of control. And that's what happened to me. The side of the story that I reflected on with you on this morning started when I was really, you know, 8, 9 years old. My dad, still alive, 90 years old, we just celebrated his birthday last week, was that supportive dad that no matter, you know, I mean, kind of overboard, if you want to know the truth, but I never had a ball game that he missed. I mean, he was always there. He was encouraging me. He was doing things that you would expect a dad to do. And on the other hand, I had a mother who's now since passed that was kind of the opposite. And so she didn't really have time to do some of the things that I was involved with, and that disappointed me. I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't my own mother come and, you know, like want to watch me, you know, at a school project or a baseball game or whatever? And it just started, it really, as an 8-year-old, my mind, I can look back and start seeing how my mind started deteriorating in some areas of importance. When I was 15 years old, really the deep dive happened for me, because I literally I was 15 years old, because I had my driver's permit and I was coming back and forth from school in the state I was living in. You could drive at 15. And so I was coming home and my dad pastored a church, and they had a gymnasium there. And all the boys from the church would get together every afternoon after school and just play basketball together. And I came through the back parking lot of the church, and I saw my mother's car parked there in a place I'd never seen her park her car. And so I just instinctively pulled over. And when I opened up the front door, there was an envelope in the front seat, and I saw my mother's wallet in there. I opened the envelope, and my mother's wallet was in there, or whatever they called, you know, carrying, you know. And then her checkbook was in there, and a note that said this: "My life is better served somewhere else than with y'all." Mm. That was it. And my dad had a every year he had a communion service on New Year's Eve for the entire church. And so that was that day. And so I had to take, at 15 years old, I had to take that note into my dad, not really even understand what was happening. And he had to read it and then perform a communion for 400 or 500 people that night. My sister and I, now having just got this information, what's our future look like? Where's our mother? All of those things that start happening. And it just sent us in a downward spiral, like physically, emotionally, and in every other way. I'm going to cut the story up a little bit, but those breadcrumbs trail you, man. I mean, they just follow you. You can always look back and follow the breadcrumbs to see where something that's happening today had, there was a contribution to it somewhere in your past. And so, as hurt as I was, I decided that day, there were parts of my family that they broke down emotionally. I became a fighter. Like, I'm like a fighter. And I was never going to be hurt like that again. I left. I went to college, played 4 years of college football. And I had a very chemistry-based relationship, meaning it was deep and tight with the guys that I played with for 4 years. I left college. And for the next 44 years, Eric, I lived life basically by myself. And I had a lot of successes, and I've had a lot of deep, dark times. I've been hurt. I've hurt a lot of people, and I'm not proud of the latter. Every year I would get a call from every couple of years I get a call from somebody on my team that I played college football with and inviting me to a reunion. But in my mind, out of sight, out of mind, were the people. They walked out on me, I walked out on them, and this is over. Finally, I decided 2 years ago to go to the reunion, and I'm sitting there, and I walked into the room, and I hadn't seen these guys in 40 plus years, and my heart began to melt. And I thought to myself, what is happening? I looked at my wife, and I'm like, you better watch me, because there's something happening with me that I don't quite understand emotionally. And as I went through the course of that weekend, there were highlights in my mind of me being in ball games with guys that I was failing. And I'd see guys that would pick me up and pat me on the back and encourage me. And I would remember times where we ate together and we broke bread and we shared heartaches and celebrations. And man, my heart was just refreshed. And it was like, oh my God, got to the end of the weekend as I closed this story. My college football coach, name is Denny Duran, a great, great man of God. He stands up in front of the entire group of 40 guys or so, and he points me out. And he says, Reggie, stand to your feet. And like a good player to a coach, I did what the coach did, and I stood up, and he said this to me. He said, I've watched you from afar for 40 years. And he said, the reason it's been for afar is you've wanted it that way. You have not wanted us in your life. And he said, I've watched you have great highs and great lows. And have you ever wondered why? And I said, yes, sir, I have. And he said, I can tell you why. He said, this was the last team you were ever a part of. You need team. You need connected tissue in your life. I went 40 years, Eric. 40 years. Thinking that I had enough juice to survive anything. And most of the time I did. But buddy, when I didn't have the resource I needed, I had no one to depend on. I had no one to turn to. I had isolated myself from my community. And that day till today, I decided, now I'm going to say this quite honestly. My wife and I have been married 38 years or 35 years, something over 30. And she has been the rock that I've needed. But in terms of the larger community, I've just isolated myself. And here's what I would say to your audience. It's a mistake. You cannot walk away from your community. And if you don't have one, you need to find one, because the resources out of life we need come from the deep relationships that we not just build, but maintain. And to maintain it, guess what? I've got to contribute to others, not just take from everybody else. And so, you know, the excitement I have about life now is we're building that. We're building a community where people come and they, you know, they're able to be open with one another, to share with one another, to create connection with one another, so that, and with the mentality of I'm going to give first. I've come here to give, not take. And so it's electrified people's lives, and it's created this opportunity for us to belong to one another and to contribute to one another. And again, with the breaths I have left on my life, that's what I'm going to do. Create. I'm going to be a part of creating this collective force where nobody has to feel for 40 years like I did. And that was, I'm walking life by myself. Friends, I don't know what community you need, but there's one around you that you need to make an effort to move into, to bring your contribution to the life of others and theirs to yours.
Reggie, thank you. That for me as a listener, and for each one of you that are hearing his story, his words, what you have felt and what you have revisualized that you have not completely dealt with in your life. So all those senses have been lighting up within you as you've heard his story, whether it be the adverse childhood experience that we don't wish upon any child. And yet we know that when we come from a background of adversity, particularly and primarily childhood adversity, we hold those scars and wounds deeply, and for, in many cases, perpetuity. It's what we do with them and how we deal with them, and how you found the collective mindset in that team, not necessarily even knowing that you needed that when you played football. And then after 40 plus years having it illuminated within your spirit that this is what you had literally and figuratively been walking away from and hiding from. I needed to hear that this morning when you shared it. And as you illuminate my soul and shine a light by sharing that story and being mindful of what you've experienced, I want the listeners to know that there is help. And that connectivity, that human engagement is the one thing. So Reggie, I have to ask a question, because I know that as I've engaged with what we do in my business and create a psychological safe space, which is what you do with your business, and why there's this beautiful synergy that we have when it's easy, quote unquote, to do, to be vulnerable and be courageous and come ready to give. When we set up the environment, we're also trying to be integral and intentional about what and why we're doing it. It's profoundly transparent. It is transferable. We could literally probably make it a franchise. You know, we could package it, but just doing it isn't enough. The people that you have to do it with have to be on another level of compassion and empathy. Where do you think, when a person comes in, it can be 100% in and share and grow so much within the time that you're with them, And then they go back to their community, which is fragmented, bits and pieces, not relational. What are some of the strategies, the tools, the tips that you can give that person to help them be more successful and to maybe help them show the power of connection to the people around them?
Great question. And I think the biggest challenge, because trust, vulnerability are muscles we just don't use that often. We have become those muscles have become, what's the word?
Atrophied.
They're not used. Yeah, atrophied. They're just not, because we've tried them before and they've just, it's backfired on us. So we've just put them in the shelves, on the shelf, so to speak, and just not used them. So interestingly enough, I think some of this is generational, Eric. So like me at 64 years old, growing up, we didn't talk about this stuff. Like, you just go get it done, brother. I mean, like, if feelings have zero relativity to your results, feelings are a distraction, you know? And so we just pound it. Like, we just go out and do the job and get it done. And, you know, if you want to talk about feelings, doing it with somebody, you know, like a counselor or your priest or your preacher, or, you know, that's not, this generation that follows us are apt to speak if they feel safe. I've got a 33-year-old son. This dude is one of the brightest men I know. Like, and so to me, I've put what I call this reverse mentoring role in place, to where I think that I have some wisdom and experience that's helped him, but my God, has he helped me just to understand the way people behind me generationally think. And he's like, Dad, you cannot expect a changing result from me if you don't take into account the way I think and the way I feel. We call it the empathetic KPIs.
Yep.
So everybody has these key performance metrics that they evaluate, but we overlook. If you want to change a real result, it's not just start at the level of action. It starts with the way people are thinking and the way they're feeling. And so what I would say from a strategic standpoint is, number one, you need to find a place to where you can be seen and heard and start flexing that muscle again of trust and vulnerability. And the second thing I would tell you is, be patient. There's some deep rooted, I call these sacred roots that are deep within us that have, buddy, they are deep, 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 that are just don't come up overnight. So if you put your hand to the plow and you're patient, you will want, at one point, I think that you can expect a change, but you've got to clean out what's there. And that just sometimes takes time. So if you go into a setting like this, that you feel safe, but you just don't feel like I'm comfortable yet to do it, give yourself some time. Like, just give yourself some time and listen to others. If I got into an environment where people were forcing me to speak, I would leave. Like, yeah. I just don't, that's not safety to me. That's like pressure to me. And then the other thing is, as you start developing it, you've got to intentionally practice it. It's like lifting weights or running or eating right. It just has to be intentional. You've got to go, like, I don't feel like it this morning, but I'm going to get up, meditate. I'm going to get up and I'm going to do the things to get my mind right and intentional for this day. And if you miss a day, don't kill yourself over it. Just get up and go do it the next day. I tell people this all the time. It's the second miss that you have that's the most critical, not the first. Like, everybody's going to miss, you know, but just don't make it a habit again. And then the final thing is, they can then, as they develop that muscle, then they can take that more, the trust, vulnerability, and they understand what safe space is about. Then they can start implementing that with confidence. See, with developing trust and vulnerability, confidence comes out of it. That way you can then go into your workplace or into the community that matters to you and start leading and facilitating that. Listen, there's the last point I'll make. Our role in terms of developing these strategies is about facilitating. This is about, how do we bring out of people things that matter to them that's already there. Like, it's there. And so I can encourage and I can facilitate, but I don't have to be the expert or the guru. And sometimes people feel like, I want this for somebody else, but I'm not smart enough. I'm not intelligent enough. I don't speak like Eric. I don't have the education of Eric, so I just don't try it. You don't need that. People just need an empathetic facilitator to help them sort through some of the things in their life. And that's why I think the win an exponential scale comes with this whole safe space, vulnerability, trust conversations that lead to connectivity.
Wow. So I love that you kind of encapsulated it with, you don't have to be the expert. You have to be the facilitator. With the trainings that you do that I've been a part of, with the trainings that I do that we've spoken about, there are so many people that are present and yet not actively engaged. And that safe place for them, by not forcing and not requiring a contribution, where that pressure then is felt, is where they're going to see witnessed that people are willing to honor and see and feel them for what they're giving, and their presence alone should be enough. A metric that we talked about at work, you know, particularly when with COVID and so many employees went remote, where we lost connectivity to begin with, and connection and actual engagement. But HR or, you know, boss is going, well, how do I analyze whether they're doing their job? Because I don't see them. You know, and the first question HR is saying now is, are they getting their work done? That should be the new measurable. Is what you expect them to do in the time frame that you expect them to do that getting done? If that's a yes, then it's a yes. Because how many people can sit in the office and be as little or non-productive and still not meet the measurables and the expectations? And you're watching them and you see them numerous times a day. So physical presence does not relate specifically to how we connect and engage with others and how we feel like we can share those feelings and vulnerabilities and strengths as well.
Can I ask you something here?
Please,
I interject something
always
here? This would be great. This is a great timing. So, you know, the conversations that we're having have really been kind of categorized as kumbaya kind of moments inside of companies that are really hard to translate into ROI.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's the way people feel. So how do you, Reggie, because I get this question all the time, how do you ascertain that ROI in terms of the business investment that we're making? And my first instinct was, how dare you? You're like, this is me, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like, yeah, we're trying to help people and you're trying to figure out how to make more money out of people. And the fact of the matter, that's not true. It's really not. So Gallup just came out with a poll that was really, really interesting to me that focused on engaged workplace, just engaged versus unengaged. But people that come to work that are really engaged and connected, what impact does that really have on the bottom line of the business? And so here's what Gallup said. This is not what Reggie or Eric said. This is what Gallup said. Gallup said engaged workplaces have a 10% increase in customer response to services rendered over unengaged employee workplaces. They have a 21% increase in revenue from engaged to unengaged employees. 21%. People are fighting for nickels and dimes right now to grow their bottom line business. How about this? Engage your people, get them connected, get their tissue working in the same direction, and you're going to have statistically 21% increase in profit just by engagement. And then the third thing is, to your point, I think 22% of engaged employees are more productive. That's what Gallup found. So there is ROI. If you're a business person, listen to this and go like, like this is like psychological mumble jumble. This is like, let's sit around in the campfire and sing songs. It's really not. The fact of the matter is this has powerful impact engaging your people between leadership number one and team, and the team amongst team, and community is built out of a people group, right? community built out of a people group,
yeah,
it's going to have ramifications that affect the bottom line of your business, even as an ancillary consideration. It's just powerful. It's just really powerful. And this now is drawing attention worldwide.
And it's amazing. Thank you for not only bringing the stories and sharing facts that are outside of what you and I feel and what you and I express.
Yeah.
I think that is the value. And I often am asked questions or not inquired about, or, you know, kind of quietly inquired about, what do they do and how can they benefit us? Mm-hmm. And when we're living in a silo of like-mindedness and not willing to hear the questions and the feelings and the concerns from the other people, we can't grow. You and I know we can't grow.
Yeah.
And to say that, to have that strength. So for a leader, for a person that's an employee, if you're not in the environment where that's going to happen, I'm not saying immediately run. There are some things right. that you can do to grow and facilitate that. You can be the facilitator and be the best leader without the title in your organization for right. your team. And you're going to see the benefits within the people that you engage with, even if you don't have that quote-unquote intentional and positive oversight in your
That's right.
management. You can do things well and successful and create the opportunities that haven't been given to you in many cases. So I don't want to say that it's just self-limiting to a manager or a leader or an organization.
No.
Your team can be more engaged and more impactful. They're going to wonder when they see the bottom line, these measurables, where yeah. is this happening? You are going to create an opportunity for yourself by giving yourself the best position to be in.
The reality of it is, and I'll shut up after this, the reality of it is what the opportunity is here is moving an organization from a place of solitude to solidarity. Like, you know, we're not working. We don't have to work in silos in solitude. You know, we don't have to do that. And the impact that creating solidarity inside of your organization has is not just emotional. There are business result applications that are available too. So you know, money or productivity, but to some it is. And so there is an application to this that I don't want people to overlook. Just think about that. The power that comes with moving people out of silos into this solidarity inside of an organization and the power that it brings.
I love that. And that fits right in with what I wanted to bring up. Because there are a lot of leaders that listen or aspiring leaders and managers, and you hit very early on in our conversation retention. And in it could be widgets to emergency medicine, to healthcare, to construction, to roofing, anything, recruitment, retention, the two big hot buttons. You know, it has been diversity, equity, inclusion. Now it's recruitment and retention. And so I don't want to, I saw something and I was both impressed and depressed. And I'll emphasize again, depressed, that we're categorizing individuals in certain lanes in the 21st century in 2024. And this came off a slide that I saw. And I want to just read some words to you and then proffer you the opportunity to say what you believe they're talking about, and then do the same with another group of words. Are you good with that, Reggie?
I'll do the best I can.
Perfect. This wasn't pre-planned, and I want the people to listen to these words as well. Assertiveness, resilience, decisiveness, risk-taking, confidence in their abilities, set clear goals, competitiveness, take decisive action to drive results. What may you think, Reggie, in hearing those words and me emphasizing some of them, might you think that a speaker is talking to a certain kind of audience and what that audience might look like?
So I think it's a sales speech. You know, I mean, it's like, I think it's honestly, it's the same type of words that were used in the 70s when I was kind of growing up in my early stages of career. It's about, you know, you could throw in the word 10Xs and hustle and all, I mean, just all of those aggressive words that just give no room for the humanity of people to me.
You say humanity and ding, 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 ding. That is one thing. It's generational. You know, in my Dare to Lead training, the Brene Brown impactful training, we learned a lot again about the generational upbringing. If I were to say one word, would you say masculine or feminine, regardless of we're talking about where the mind immediately goes?
Yeah.
And you went to the 70s. I went to, you know, competitive. I'm going to just say decisiveness. Masculine or feminine, do you think?
It's masculine.
Not human, though, right? Because why are we drawing that distinction? There's a silo we just put up. This is a 21st century, 2024. This is a slide. I'm going to read some other words. Are you good with that?
Okay. Good.
Empathy, intuition, collaboration, building strong relationships, fostering inclusivity, valued and heard, authenticity. What do you think they're talking about there? And what do you think they're saying?
I think they're talking about culture, and I think they're talking about community there. And I think to your question about male or female, historically it's been those are female descriptives. Again, to your point, not human descriptives, which I think is the fail point.
I would wholeheartedly agree, and we did not plan or confer prior to. Mm-mm. When you said something early on, I said, I've got to find this, because I literally took a picture of this. This was a training, and it's titled on the one side, Masculine Leadership Qualities. The other side, and in pink, no less, Feminine Leadership Qualities. And now, mind you, in context, I don't know if they were having the same conversation that we're having. And yet when you see that up there for the alliterative learner, for those that read and assimilate, this doesn't tell the whole story. This says that we should be separating them, and we are separated. So
it's offensive to me. Now that you put it in that context, it's offensive to me, because I feel like I have more desires and tendencies for those pink letters than I do the aggressive ones that would best the humanity. Society would judge me on, like, this. If he's a male, he's this. And the fact of the matter is, none of those characteristics are what I'm after.
On the masculine leadership quality side?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. There's some things there, but when I hear that second list, I'm like, my God, that's what I want. I mean, those are the characteristics I want flowing and oozing out of me, because I think those are the difference makers.
I agree. And I was initially upset when I saw this, and I'm hoping upon hope that it was to drive this feeling in people to say, that is not who and how I want to be seen as. And I want to be resilient, yes, but how is that just a male or a masculine quality?
Right.
So yes, I want to set clear goals, and yet they can have every opportunity for people to hear, see, and feel them, and to engage and collaborate, to be creative, to use intuition to help shape and move and mold where we want to go.
Is there a way to where the blend can happen that creates like the ultimate human experience? Think about it. I mean, I think that there are words in each list that could be combined to create something new. Like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I don't want to scrap list one, right? But at the same time, is there something that can come out of those two lists that creates a superhuman, you know, or a super experience that benefits more based upon having both?
And I love that you said super experience, because the experience is genderless. It is a human experience. It's the human connection. And I wouldn't have been able to have this conversation a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, let alone 20 years ago. And you had mentioned your age, and I'm 56, so you're a little bit older. Good on you. And yet we start to put our own finite measurables on things. Well, that person's not going to get me. They've got gray hair. They're over 60. They're a baby boomer. They're a bunch of turds. You know, they're the ones that created all these problems. And we see problems in age groups. We see problems in organizations. We see, as opposed to looking for opportunities and looking for solutions. And I don't mean solutions that are going to fix everything. But if you can be more vulnerable, be inclusive, be collaborative, I swear you're going to be healthier, happier. The whole isolation piece, Reggie, that we've skirted around and also shined the light on, suicidality, mental illness, feeling of inadequacy, anxiety for not feeling involved, and then the pressure to have to be involved, and not having a team and a leader, and being your own guru where the answers are within. We've been told for so long that we can't be that person in this organizational structure or this family structure or this this religious structure and order.
Yeah.
We can't. So then we shut down, we isolate, we don't get into that deep living water. We stay either in the kiddie pool of fear and apprehension, and then we feel the sense of embarrassment because we're mature. And yet if I am in the deeper water, I still have my floaties on. We haven't been given permission somewhere in life to go, to do. And if we have, it hasn't been sustainable because we didn't. And this is the only time that I can say that I'm looking at myself as I say this. I didn't continue that consistency. If I skipped the one time, that was okay. I started skipping the second and the third and the fourth, and then I was a failure because we all fail in life, Reggie, right?
Yeah.
But then because I went back to that proverbial label as failure. And then the isolation is deeper and darker.
And you go into that secret place.
Yes. And that's where I've lived too much of my life, Reggie. That's where I reach out to people, men, women, children, as I work with people from addiction to religious trauma to organizational and corporate structure and leadership. If we're all sitting together and willing to be vulnerable and share, and we always appreciate the presence. They're not getting up and they're not going to the bathroom 33 times and they're not checking their phone. They're actively engaged, even though they're not, you know, I don't have to limit. I can say you're actively engaged if you're there and you're taking it all in, because that's what you need in that moment. One day you're going to share and you're going to open your mouth, and it's going to be as if the universe opened a hole and said, I've lived, and now I'm free to give.
Yep.
Whereas before, I hadn't felt that way. Wow, there are so many things that we could continue to talk about, and being mindful of our listenership and those people that are going to hear. Reggie, I want to, on air, ask you to come back if you feel like there's a an appropriate thing that you want to discuss, that we want to dive deeper in, if something's going on in your professional, personal life that you want to share, and you believe that that we can add, be additive to this and not just take away, that we honor the people with some of the wisdoms of your life because of your strength in that vulnerability. And an organization that I know and really love is Warriors Rest Foundation. And one of their mottos is, with the basically, and I'm going to paraphrase it, courage begins with the conversation. The conversation in that vulnerability is courage, and to open yourselves up. And we always say, the yes and is opening yourself. Yes is acknowledgement. Yes is acceptance. You don't have to agree. The and is your contribution, your collaboration, your creativity. And if I'm willing, if I've been honored by you to have been heard and watched and seen, I must reciprocate in order for that life-giving water, that inflow of air, oxygen, you know, blood, whatever you want to use.
Yep.
Go ahead.
I know we're running up on time, and I would be honored to come back. I feel this in my spirit, and I want to say this to the people who might be hearing this. There's two things. Number one, your progress starts with honesty. If you can't be honest with yourself, all progress starts with honesty. And so if you felt something in our conversation today, and you know that it's at least a step in a different direction that may be helpful, take it. That's the first thing that I say. And then the second thing I think I want people to hear is this. This is from personal experience. My pain has paved the way for the progress of others. So the pain you're going through right now may be paving the way for someone else's progress. Now, see, that doesn't sit well with people, because the only way, Eric, they think you get by pain is just eradication. Like, hey, this is about me, and get this out of me. And what I'm telling your listeners today is this. My pain started being removed when I used it for the assistance to someone else.
Yeah.
So some of you are deep, deep, deep in pain and hurt, and my heart breaks for you today. I don't see you, but I feel you. And what I'm telling you is that depth of pain someone is crying and in need of, just for you to share. And if you will share, it'll pave the way of their for their progress. But what it'll also do is to create this unexpected healing in you that will move your life and elevate you in a way that all the, you know, other things that you've tried to do have just failed at. So I'm not saying embrace your pain. I'm saying recognize it and think of it as an opportunity to pour into somebody else for their progress, and watch what it does for you.
This is and has been the EMS Improv Podcast, where we've engaged. We've tried to be mindful. Reggie shared and told some stories. We are powered by Jams. I'm Eric Chase, and I couldn't have ended it any more beautifully. And I want to say thank you, Reggie Barak, for being here and giving us time for our listeners and sharing some pearls of wisdom. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
I'm pretty visible on social media. I'm, you know, they find me on Facebook. Our website is That One Company, and it's the letter one .net. They can just reach out to me, and I'd love to talk to them via way we can help or just be a part of their journey. Happy to look at that with them as well.
Awesome. And for those of you that are struggling, have questions, have concerns, want help or need help, you can reach me at the emsimprov@gmail.com. We're always here, and if we're not a helper, we're going to be a connector. And again, Reggie, honor to have you today, and thank you so very much for taking.
It's been my honor to be here with you, brother. Thank you so much.